Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to an August 31 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. This evening we have with us Larry Jarbo, a St. Mary's County Commissioner from Maryland. And Larry, you are with us, are you not?
Yes, I'm here, James.
Very good. Well, welcome to the program again.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Yeah, it's been several months, I think, since we had a chat online, but I think this is appropriate because a lot has happened over the last few months, and it would be good to maybe get a little recapping of some of the things that you've sponsored on your property there in Charlotte Hall, Maryland, as well as some of the things that are still coming up this year. And in particular, I wanted to discuss with you the announcement that a manufacturer of electric vehicles is coming to our home state of Kentucky, and you've been an electric vehicle enthusiast for quite some time, and I thought perhaps you could share some insights with our listening audience.
Be happy to.
So why don't we begin with the April event that was a 1,000-mile road rally of vehicles equipped with hydrogen boosters. Perhaps you could just describe how that went.
It went pretty good. We had the first ever pre-Earth Day hydrogen booster rally, and the whole idea was to get some numbers, some ideas of is this really working, or is it more hype than hydrogen? So I, you know, put out on the internet, let's do this, guys. Let's get it together. Let's get these boosted vehicles out there. And we actually had three vehicles in the rally. I put together a rabbit that had a big Bob Boyce-style brute force 61-plate booster in the back bed of the truck. And Smack, his name is Dustin, or they call him Electric as well. He's got a few different aliases out there. But Dustin brought his vehicle all the way from Vermont, and we met on the road in Virginia on 95 at the one of the the turnoffs there. And then we finally caught up with Bob Boyce. He was all the way down in Florida by the time we were traveling, like connecting parallel roads and stuff like that. The original idea was to all meet at the Jarbo's Mill property and go from there. But as it turned out, people were running late, and we went from plan A to plan B. I think we went all the way beyond Z by the time it all, we finally made it to Key Largo.
Technical difficulties along the way, weren't there?
It was a grand adventure. You know, you just roll with the punches. I mean, every day that we can be out here doing this and experimenting and learning is a good day. So we had great T-shirts that you were able to provide for the rally. And believe it or not, it was everything that was a problem turned out to be a blessing later. Like the T-shirts, you called up, right as we were leaving and said, well, don't you have the T-shirts yet? I said, well, no, they haven't showed up yet. And we didn't know what had happened to them. Well, right before we got ready to take off, I blew out an inverter. I was pushing the limits of the inverter and overheated it and blew it out. And we had to go up the road about 20 miles to Waldorf. That's a town that's north of us, and get an inverter from a boat supply. And we had to rewire it in real quick. And while I was up there, I hit the UPS place, and sure enough, that's where they were. They've forgotten how to find us. Our business has been there for 50-some years, and UPS has forgotten where we are. So
that way you were all able to don the shirts and advertise the rally as you were traveling.
Yes, we did. And I think if you look at the Smacks Boosters site, you'll see a picture of all of us together smiling with our T-shirts on.
Okay.
So, it all works out.
Yeah, and even though there's YouTube video of that, isn't there?
I think so, yeah. As it turned out on the trip, the best numbers as far as the best documentation came from Smack's vehicle. A Buick? It's terrible.
Yeah, I think it was an old, wasn't it?
It was a GM product that was souped up, and that's embarrassing. And Dustin, when you listen in, forgive me for this, because I rode in the thing all the way back up the road. It was a souped-up
I think it was an old.
Oldsmobile, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was old Cutlass. That's what it was, Olds Cutlass. And, one of the older models that was really cool and decked out. And he got a consistent, 15% improvement. And we tried a full tank with the smack on, full tank with the smack off, with a booster on, booster off, back and forth, back and forth. And so we were able to really document that well. My truck, on the other hand, my little rabbit, I only had to fill it twice because it got 43 miles to the gallon. And that's what I normally get, is 43 miles to the gallon. But I was doing, 55 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, and I never do that around here. I mean, around here, these are country roads. It's about 45 miles an hour is what I used to travel at. So it got much better speed, and it really ran. It's a geared-down truck, and for it to run the way it ran, it was impressive. But once we got down to Florida, it was going to be a long trip up the road, so I packed up the electrolyzer, packed it on the back of Electric's car, and we all jammed into his car and came up the road. And then Bob Boyce had followed us on a parallel track, and since we were running behind because Dustin got off about 12 hours late, life happens, you know how it is.
Sure.
And so since we were running behind, Bob made it down to West Palm Beach, and he was getting around, I think it was 60 miles to the gallon on a Prius. It was his first test of the booster that he put into it. And that was, again, an improvement over what a Prius normally gets, which I think is about 50 miles to the gallon. So we didn't get great numbers, but, hey, it was a beginning. It was a start. And I'm hoping that the next event that's happening in mid-October down in Florida will have a form that we can transmit over the Internet, and people can fill it out and do their numbers as they bring their boosters or their vehicles down, and we can see what kind of vehicles are getting good mileage and document that. So we could actually have a booster rally where people come in from different directions but are all off the same sheet of paper, so to speak.
Right.
So there's good stuff happening.
Yeah, now what didn't show up to the first rally, the boosters definitely showed up to your June event.
They're starting to come out. That's right. I think, what's happening is people are reading about this on the Internet, and then they're not only people are purchasing boosters off of eBay and purchasing them, from different places, but they're also, and this is what I find really impressive, building them themselves, and coming up with different designs, and then showing it, open sourcing it, saying, here's how I built mine, here's what I'm getting, here's what I used to get. Some people are bringing in great numbers. Other people are saying, well, it really doesn't work so well, but, here's what I think is the problem. We're talking about it. I mean,
yeah,
two,
exactly.
3 years ago, were we talking about boosting cars with water? No. We were sort of...
That's very true.
It was out there, but now we're doing it.
Well, I've been taking a public survey for the past 3 years. I've been asking strangers if they know anything about water fuel technology, just to get a feel on how knowledgeable the public is. And you're right. There's a big difference between the summer of 2008 and the summer of 2005.
That's right. It's, it's a change is going on within the people and within us. And I just went to as an elected official, I go to a lot of different events, and we had a members co-op for our electric utility, and every year we have an annual meeting where people can ask questions, and of course we vote on the new board of members. And during the questions, one guy got up and said, he says, I want to know what SMECO is doing about all the alternative technologies. Are you, applying this and helping people in their homes hook up so that they can feed into the grid using wind and solar? And then he said, and this new water for gas, that's a big deal. He said, there's something out here with that. We better look into this. And I got a kick out of it because he was reading the water for gas website, and whether or not that's all factual, there may be more hype than hydrogen there.
Yeah, but at least it's something that's catching people's attention. I mean,
that's exactly
can't
it's
log
catching
onto the
their
internet
attention.
Now without that coming up on the screen.
Well, that's and the thing about it is he may not be able to replicate that, but hopefully he'll get educated to where he'll discover anomalies as he's experimenting and say, "Oh my gosh, look at this." And start putting two and two together, so to speak.
Well, I had a funny experience yesterday, or Friday. I went into a motor rewinding shop, and I inquired about an alternator. The fellow told me over the phone that he has a GM alternator that just has a one-wire hookup.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether he modifies it to whether it's just one wire coming out of it that you can... it simplifies adapting it to any vehicle. He says some of the newer vehicles occasionally will have the wiring harness get fried or something. And so he produces a rebuilt alternator that has a single wire coming out of it.
Well, that's easy. That's the positive wire.
Yeah, to where you don't even have to worry about hooking it up to other...
Yeah, your ground is your ground. Right.
Right. And so he asked me why I was interested in one. And, you know, I've come to this crossroads many, many times over the last few years where I wonder, should I tell this person why I want to buy stainless steel or why I'm looking for plexiglass or whatever, you know, components for a booster or whatever. And so I decided, as I have in the past, that it's better to go ahead and tell people what you're doing because then they may actually be able to contribute something.
And it opens the conversation up. That's right.
Exactly. And many times people have revealed astonishing things because of being open with them about what you're up to.
Mm-hmm.
So in his case, he says, well, come here. I want to show you something. He leads me back to the rear of his shop. He's got a full-size van back there. And he points into the grill. And there I see some of these jars, you know, that people are hooking up their homemade boosters.
Mm-hmm.
And he was real proud of the fact that he'd made this multi-cell electrolyzer.
And he knew enough to go to multi-cell.
Yeah. And, you know, this just, like you said, this wouldn't have happened a few years ago.
That's
it
right.
It wouldn't have been that often that you'd run into someone who's doing something like this.
That's exactly right. Now, if I saw that, I would have encouraged him to go to some kind of a plastic housing, but that's a very personal thing with me. I just had, a bubbler blow up, and I know that I could just imagine the shattering glass.
You know, and I've thought about that long and hard, too, and I've thought maybe we could introduce some kind of girdle, a rubber cup that you put the mason jar in. If there's an explosion.
You're always thinking, James.
But seriously, I think that would, similar to these insulators they put around beer cans and whatnot, you know?
I see where you're headed with this. I don't know that Grandma would want, you know, you stealing her girdle off the line.
Yeah, but I'm serious. Something
they're kind of outdated.
A rubber casing to go around a glass, and that would make you feel better about those.
Maybe. I thought maybe a big steel, you know, 1-inch thick box, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, something. Again, there's so many other housings we can use that I'm working right now with AZEC. It's a 1-inch thick, like a foam a PVC material. It's wonderful stuff to work with.
Now, is this the same as cutting board material or no?
No, it's different. Cutting board material is more of like a high-density plastic. This actually is very light stuff. If you go into a big, like a building supply, and ask for AZEK, AZEK, A-Z-E-K, and they'll show it to you. It comes in all different sizes. I'm using a 1x8, which is actually 7 1/4 by 15/16, and it's just the right size for the plates that we're using.
Is this the stuff that people are using for artificial decks or whatnot? Or
I don't know exactly what they use it for, because I've only used it for assembling, you know, these boosters here, the scuffy cell, which we'll probably talk about it later, but it's really, maybe they use it, they must, because it's cut into lengths, like I said, 1x8, which is really, you know, it's like a piece of wood when they dress it down, and it's 15/16 by 7 1/4, but I don't know why they'd use it on a deck, because...
Okay, it says here they're using it for trim, decks, molding, porches,
okay.
Rails.
Molding,
yeah.
I could see. The cost of a piece 18 foot long, you know, I mean, it's enough that I don't know that I'd... of course, I run a sawmill, so for me a wood deck is a pretty reasonable, you know, not too expensive. But, and it's... this stuff, I would think, if it got wet, would be a little on the slick side. So, But I could see molding. I could see.
Yeah, apparently, you know, what you're buying is a piece of their trim.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't have any texture on it.
Yeah, there's no texture. It's a nice smooth surface.
But they do sell textured pieces for decking.
Okay, and you know, I
wood.
Didn't need to ask about that because I knew specifically what I was going for per the specs that was on the Panacea site.
Nice.
And there's a nice download on that site. He's really got a very comprehensive booster, you know, course that you can take. And of course, the price is right. You can get educated on boosters on the internet, and it just a matter of going to a site. So, that's exciting.
That you use a water-based PVC cement with it, huh?
Yeah, it's a simple PVC cement, and you can actually use like stainless steel zip screws to hold it together in addition to the PVC binding. So you can, you know, get your little zip gun and zip them right in. And works like a champ. I put one together myself and an Amish cabinet maker, and he has an electrolyzer. His is a big boy that is made of 1-inch thick acrylic, and it holds plates that are almost 2 foot by 2 foot, eight plates like that. And and of course he was working with it and said, you know, I don't really like this stuff. It's just too soft, you know, because it's kind of foamy on the. It's not soft, but it's light on the inside. But after he put it together and looked at it, and we went through, because this cell you don't need to cut grooves with a machine shop and all the sophistication. It uses vinyl as gaskets, door trim, door edge trim. And after he put it all together and looked at it, he said, you might have convinced me that this stuff is okay. Let me know how it turns out. And so, you know, I'll get back, because that's what we do, is we share information. The technology keeps growing that way.
Yeah, there was an article in the paper last week about the younger generation of researchers is not behaving as their predecessors, and they're sharing information mostly via the internet.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
and you know, that's where, when I look at some of these guys on eBay and stuff, you know, trying to sell their cells, and they'll show you something that's basically a PVC tube. You can't see inside it. You can't see the internal workings. I would tell anybody, be skeptical. If they're not going to show a diagram, even the car companies, even GM, who's done their best to crush electric vehicle technology, you know, the EV1 and the way they crush the trolley cars to keep them out of the, you know, cities so that we go to buses, you know, all the things, their conspiracies against EVs, even so, they do post the specs on these things as far as how they're built and the diagrams, and, you know, even on their own cars, they sell you a car, but they do, you know, part by part how it's built. You know, they spec it out.
An interesting story about that?
Sure.
Most people don't realize it, but a Kentucky manufacturer was the first to have a booster built in China for export to the U.S.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, a couple guys who actually came to my museum, and they even gave me a couple of these things, and I installed one on a guy's car for him. But the interesting thing about it is, as you were saying, they actually made it a sealed unit where you couldn't open it at all. It was welded shut. And you know as well as I do that no electrolysis chamber should be a black box that you can't open.
Non-serviceable.
You know,
that's
if you're
right.
Trying to protect your interests, thinking that you can, you know, seal it up and no one will be able to figure out what's going on inside. Well, that booster didn't succeed.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why. They had no way of servicing it.
Sure. I mean, as a guy who's dealt with electric vehicles in China, that basically an electric vehicle is something that, like a golf cart. You can open it up. You can see where your problem is. If it's your batteries, you can test them. It's easy to diagnose. And I was selling scooters, the electric scooters, and sold a real good brand that was solid and dependable. And then the Chinese got out there with these mass-produced pieces of junk and lightweight plastic and wiring that was a nightmare. And the next thing you know, and they're selling them for half the price that I could sell them for, and people were buying them. And then they'd run them for a month. Something would break. They couldn't get it fixed. And basically, they were disposable, and of course, it ruined that industry for a while. because people said, well, I don't want to buy a piece of junk. They're no good. They don't work. And meanwhile, the people I was selling scooters to are still riding them around today.
Well, I fell in love with the scooter you had at your June event.
Oh, yeah. They're nice to get around. Oh, the silver one. The Nova Cru or I'm losing my mind here. Don't mind me, because the older you get, the more you forget. But
that was Todd's bike, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, yes. That bike, that thing is really smooth.
Yeah, very, very nice.
Exactly.
Well, I think many, many more people would be riding an electric bike to work for their daily commute if they knew how nice they were, if you get a decent one.
I would agree with that. And not only for their daily commute, just to go out, you know, on Saturday afternoon and cruise around town.
Yeah.
And they'd probably start running errands where they'd, you know, throw a backpack on and get their groceries. And it really is a convenient, pleasant way to get around.
It's refreshing.
To me, it's one of the, I think, energy solutions that's out there is electric bikes. I think
the only problem with it is that you're not expending enough of your own energy. It allows you to be a couch potato.
Well, you can pedal if you want to.
Yeah.
You know, now
I did when I took my little 15-minute ride on it.
Yeah. Now the one that Todd had didn't have pedals on it. It was closer to a motorcycle.
Oh, that's why.
Actually.
Okay.
That,
I knew
that's
I didn't
why.
Do any pedaling, but.
But there was a bike at the event, and it quit during the event, and you know I put it off to the side because you're just working hard and doing stuff, and I went to troubleshoot it the other day just to say, well, what happened to this? And all it did was one wire had come loose, and just you know hook it back up, and you're back on the road again. So, and that was just a matter of you know hitting a lot of vibration and. You know,
well,
so,
being that we are on the subject of electric vehicles, so you were attempting to introduce electric bicycles or scooters to the community, and you failed because of the competition from imports, which proved to be of poor quality. But you also converted a car, and now this goes back several years, doesn't it?
Yeah, this goes back to '99. I took an MR2. And it's like looks like a Fiero. Toyota made this little two-seater. And I took it and I pulled the engine out and put a forklift motor. It's the FB4001 made by Advanced DC in Syracuse, New York. It's for big electric forklifts. And put that in there, you know, you modify the clutch. And it's really, you know, not that complicated. It's just a matter of going through the right schematic. And there's a guy, Bob Batson, he's busy as can be right now with this whole energy situation that he's got orders all over the place, and he helps people convert them. He's with EVA, Electric Vehicles of America. And he's up in Wolfsboro, New Hampshire.
Okay.
And he's very accessible by phone. You know, you can call him if you're having a problem, and he will give you the whole step-by-step process of how to do it, and when you run into a glitch, he'll talk you through it, so to speak. And so I built it with a pack of batteries in the trunk, and I put a little Honda generator in the front, and it was like a plug-in hybrid. And you know, I drove it because back then I wasn't a county commissioner. I drove it every day, and it worked fine. And you know, if you needed to go a little further, you fired up the generator. And you could go a little further, and it would be charging as you were going. And later on, after I became a county commissioner, the distance that I had to travel, I had to go back to a vehicle because I usually put on about 500 miles a week. And the electric, with even the little generator, just couldn't keep up with that demand. So some of the kids at the high school knew I had this car, and they said, well, you know, we want to race a car. Is there anything we can do? And I said, well, let's take this one. And let's pull the generator out and put another pack of batteries in, and we'll series parallel split it and really goose up the voltage, and you'll have a really good car for racing, and then I'll have a car with twice as much range for on the street. So we did that, and if you go to the internet and you do Green Hornet MR2 on a Google search, you'll see the car, and we've had a great time with it. You know, we still hold a couple records with the car, but we've gotten out of racing for the past couple years. And now the car is sitting right beside my office at work without a pack of batteries into it, and I'm waiting on that transition where lithium batteries become affordable. So as soon as they become affordable, I'm looking forward to the time when I can put a pack of batteries in that and get over 100 miles of range. That 100-mile limit, whether it's 100 miles per gallon or 100 miles of range on an electric vehicle, is just a personal limit. And if I can do that on one end or the other, and even both by the time I leave this world, I'll feel like, hey, we're on to the right track, so
you'll
to speak.
Be in heaven.
I think so. On heaven on earth.
Okay, well, I think you're qualified to comment on the recent development that happened here in Kentucky, where the governor announced on Monday that Zap Manufacturing is coming to Kentucky, and they're going to be putting up a 1 million-square-foot factory in Simpson County, which is sort of between Nashville and Bowling Green, right on the
Okay,
tip.
Well, they're putting a factory in.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's, we talked earlier about this a little bit. I didn't know they were putting a factory in.
Oh, yeah, they're building a 1 million-square-foot factory. I don't think it's an existing building. I think they're putting it up. They're breaking the ground, I understood, this week.
Okay.
And,
well, they need to, because they've been importing three-wheelers from China. And to be honest with you, the Chinese manufacturing and the quality on those is not very good.
Okay, so they do have a bad reputation.
The people who buy them end up, the vehicle that they're selling that's the all-electric vehicle is called the Xebra, X-E-B-R-A. And there's actually a website, Yahoo Talk Group, where the owners, they're able to help each other to get through some of the glitches. Now, there's dealers out there that really go above and beyond the call of duty to help people, get through their problems. But Zap, from what people are saying and what I'm reading, hasn't given a lot of backup support for their dealers. I was even thinking about becoming a Zap dealer.
Well, they're inviting that. I'm on their website right now, and they are inviting people to become dealers.
The last I checked, the way you became a dealer, and this wasn't that difficult. If you had the money, it was to put down $50,000 in the purchase of inventory. You'd purchase
$100,000.
Okay, so they've gone up since then. But even $100,000 to purchase the inventory, because that's you're holding the inventory, so it's not a bad investment, as long as the company supports you and as long as the company has good products to put out there.
Well, I think what part of the negative feedback about the company is because, as you say, they were a foreign company or foreign made. And they really didn't have very many dealers. It says here they only had 20. And that's
that
now.
That would seem right, spread all across the country.
Because you're talking about a conversation that was being, a chat group that was discussing this, a year ago or longer?
Yeah, I got out about 6 months or so. They didn't really want to hear about the next generation of alternative energy and how good their vehicles could really be if they weren't, if they were using free energy coming from zero point, or say a hydrogen on demand genset. You and I know that these are possibilities. They couldn't see that. A lot of them thought the sun was the greatest source of energy in the world, and I see the sun as a great source of energy, but I see that we live in a sea of energy, and there's so many different ways we can harvest energy.
But in general, you're saying that the tenor of the conversation on this group was that people were having difficulties with their vehicles and they weren't getting dealer support because of the lack of dealers or
it was
distance, capable of helping them?
Distance from dealers. And remember, you've got an electric vehicle, and your dealer that you bought it from, you had to drive 200 or 300 miles, because really, people who buy electric vehicles, to their credit, are very passionate. They want to drive a clean, quiet, non-polluting vehicle that's, relatively low maintenance. And that's a key. It's got to be relatively low maintenance. It's like a golf cart. It goes out on the golf course all day long. You plug it in at night, and it goes back out on the golf course all day long. And that's dependability. Not much goes wrong with a golf cart when it's being used continuous. But they were having glitches, especially the batteries, a lot of battery problems. And how do you, number one, you can have a tow bar on a regular vehicle, especially if it's especially if it's a manual transmission, and hook up your tow bar and you take it, you drive it 200 or 300 miles. I've just, past year, I've towed I don't know how many rabbits back from South Carolina, or different combinations of vehicles, you know, that you, you know, put under a tow dolly or whatever. Well, the Zapic Zebra, it doesn't really go on a tow dolly very well because of it's a three-wheeler. So it's kind of an, it just doesn't work on a tow dolly. You almost need to have your own trailer that you pull it up on if you break down. So, you know, to take it to a dealer is kind of a difficult thing, and people that have to trailer it all the way, it's just frustrating for folks.
Yeah.
It's not like a motorcycle where you can put it up on the back of the pickup truck. You know, it's too big for that, but it doesn't tow well, you know, behind it. So the you know, and then to actually have to have a car trailer every time your car breaks down to tow it to the place, just a little bit difficult, to say the least.
Well, apparently, even though these technologies that we've been dabbling in, such as hydrogen from water, or in this case, battery vehicle, electric vehicle, these things go way back. They go back to the 1800s, and yet we're experiencing these birth pains as if it's a new creation because they have been ignored or suppressed. And so we're having to go through this learning curve that really should have been taken full circle 100 years ago.
Well, yeah, you wrote the book on that. That's, you know, your book really describes that so well. And like you know, I've gotten a 50 copies of your book, that I make sure that key people get a copy when it's necessary. You know, that if someone's interested and expresses an interest, I'll give them a copy of your book because they will probably take the technology a little further somehow. And it's funny, yesterday, that one of the Amish guys, that he's a young guy, and he was quoting from your book, and he said, well, what do you think about those MIBs? Do you think they're going to come after us? And I said, no, I don't think so. We're not, you know, the booster technology is pretty well out there. Don't worry about that. And, you know, he's quoting from Stan Meyer, and you know, he's reading it, and I said, you know, ingest all the information, but observe. Do this and observe, because that's really where you're going to, you know, find out what works and what doesn't work, is through simple observation. And there's so many things within this, you know, I'm jumping now from the electric, because the electric is proven technology. You know, the only weakness that we have in electric vehicles today is the batteries. We've got wonderful controllers, we've got great motors, we've got good donor vehicles. We can have 100-mile-plus vehicles, but we're not going to get them on lead-acid batteries unless two-thirds or three-quarters of the vehicle is tied up in batteries. But the lithium batteries is where we've got to go, and that's the problem. The expense of those, and even securing them, is difficult. So John McCain made a you know, statement that a prize for the best batteries, you know, for electric vehicles, that the government should sponsor something like that. Well, actually, I believe the government should basically support all energy technologies. Let them all compete in a free.
Or don't you think it would even be appropriate to have some kind of a congressional hearing in which the suppression of battery technology is fully exposed, and that doesn't necessarily need to be prosecuted, but there needs to be some effort to force those who've been buying up and shelving this technology to release it.
Well, that, you know, and everybody knows what's happened. Texaco bought up the Ovionics technology from the EV1, the nickel hydride technology, and basically put it on a shelf. And now that we've got lithium, and who's bringing the lithium to the market? Unfortunately, it's the Chinese. And the problem with the Chinese bringing it to the market is they're bringing not particularly good quality to the market. And if a person's going to invest a fairly large sum of money, I mean, a pack of lithium batteries for my car would be $30,000, $40,000. Now, I'm not going to pay that because that's too much. And that's so the technology is kind of held up right now, where if you've got enough money, you can have a great car, a Tesla Roadster for $109,000. But and even then, you got to get in line and wait, along with all the movie stars. You know,
in fact,
so
I'm looking at the Zap X.
The crossover X, yes.
Yeah,
I think it's pure vaporware.
Mm-hmm. Well, The approximate suggested retail price is $60,000. Availability goal, 2010.
Okay, well, I would suspect more like never.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, I've just become very pragmatic and somewhat cynical, though I'm an optimist at the same time. I just think it's vaporware designed to drive their stock up, you know, because do they even have one that they're demonstrating to the public, you know?
Oh, that's a good question. Now,
yeah.
I do notice that an investor has given them $10 million. Let's see here, under their corporate news, of course it mentions there's a $68 million Kentucky manufacturing incentives given to them, but apparently Al Youssef, I guess he's from Dubai.
Okay.
He's given them a $10 million credit line.
Yeah.
And that was, when was that, May?
Okay, Dubai, one of the major oil producers.
No, it was the 5th of this month that took
right.
place.
Okay, given a major credit line. So if they mess up, he can pull the credit and they go under. I'm being kind of cynical, bear with me, because I've just seen it too many times that you know, they promote a product, like the Crossover X is what got me enthused with the Zap. I said, my gosh. This was 3 years ago. I saw this thing and I said, "Wow, this is going to be it." I mean, you know, I would scrape together $60,000 for a car that had that kind of performance and looks and style.
Oh, so that's why you're cynical, because you were looking at it 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's still. Well, what were they saying is the projected date for release then?
You know, it was like right around the corner type thing, kind of like the Chevy Volt. I think the Chevy Volt is vaporware. They, you know. How soon is it? And even when it does come out, you only get 40 miles of range, you know, in the electric mode. Again, I want that longer range personally, because I want to be able to do all my errands in a day, you know, my normal day's travel, electric. And I just don't see that. I don't see it happening.
Well, it'll be very, very interesting to see what comes to Kentucky, what this factory is going to be producing, and how long it's going to take them to get it on the road. Supposedly, they're supposed to have something rolling within a year, which
well,
sounds
you know,
incredible. But
God bless them if that's what happens, if they put out a good, solid electric vehicle that gets over 100 miles of range and is within a reasonable, like a $20,000 price, you know, level, so to speak. The Triac is a good example of one that's being advertised as lithium batteries, three-wheeler, cool little car. I think they have maybe one or two prototypes out there that show well. You know, they're neat. But I kind of suspect that it's the same thing, that they're asking people to get in line and put $2,000 down as a down payment so that they can have a place in line before they can, you know, end up paying their money.
Well, I must say that Zap has a little more modest deposit. They're asking for $100.
Okay, well, $100 is reasonable, except for the fact if it disappears altogether.
For instance, Zebra,
mm-hmm.
electric sedan, the manufacturer's suggested retail price is $11,700, and they're
okay.
asking for a $100 reservation deposit.
Okay, and they're shipping those out of China.
Okay.
And that's it's a kind of a, looks like a jelly bean, like a rolling jelly bean.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a strange-looking vehicle. I like the little PK. If you look at the Zap PK, three-wheeler.
The pickup truck?
The pickup truck.
Okay.
I thought that would be great for a hydrogen-on-demand generator or even a little biodiesel genset. Tucked
that's $12,500.
Yeah, if you can imagine. Well, let's leave hydrogen-on-demand out of the equation, because right now I don't know if anybody's replicated and has got it where it's off the shelf, so to speak, or even open source where we can replicate it. But imagine a biodiesel genset on the back of that ran a welder. So you could have a little work truck, and if you needed to go further than the range, which is probably only about 30 miles, if you really figure what the actual range of that vehicle is. So you need to go beyond, you fire up the genset, and all of a sudden, you're on the road again. So it's not a bad way to go. The problem with that particular model is the 72 volts, and it hardly gets out of its own way. And I've brought up on the forum many times to bump it up to about 96 volts. It would make the batteries last longer. It would easy to charge from a genset. You just rectify it right out of the outlet, and you could you wouldn't need a fancy charger. So but there was not a lot of enthusiasm for that. They bump them up to 84 volts, but they don't like going to 96 for some reason. And I'm not quite sure why, because I think the electric motor will handle it, unless the electric motor is so right on the edge as it is anyway that it just won't handle anything over what it's what it's doing right now.
Well, the newest thing they're showing here is an Alias at $32,500. It says expected delivery 2009.
Okay, and is that electric or is that a little gas?
That's
okay,
electric.
That's an electric. I still say it's vaporware. I mean, maybe that's the one that's going to come out of the Kentucky plant. Are they saying lead acid or lithium batteries?
Let's see here. It says 0 to 60 in 7.7 seconds, 100 miles per hour, 100 plus miles range, 1,600 pounds.
And that's a lithium vehicle.
It's not commenting on that I can see. No, I don't see any comment on the battery configuration. Now, there are some YouTube references here, and apparently they're calling this a Detroit Electric vehicle. Detroit Electric is the company they're saying is. I guess that's what they're calling their.
Okay, well, remember Detroit Electric was a company way back in the 1900s, early 1900s.
Yeah, isn't that something? They're resurrecting that name, huh?
So maybe that's what the plant in Kentucky is all about. Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Let's hope they're headed in that direction.
Well, it seems like next Saturday we're going to be having a meeting wherein there will be a couple of Zap vehicles there and a representative of the company. So we'll be able to address some of these questions and concerns to him and see how they're dealing with these issues.
Well, yeah, and hopefully I've given you enough information and you've searched enough on the Internet to ask, when is this stuff really going to come out? It's one thing to have a nice little three-wheeler that maxes out at about 40 miles per hour, for around the farm or, it just with like on a Navy base where you'd be using it on roads that are, limited down to 25 or 30 miles an hour anyway, as a retirement community, things like that. But getting out on the highway and having those kind of, the Exebra limits of like 40, 45 miles an hour max is just not enough. You got to be, and if you went any faster with that particular three-wheeler, the way the steering wheel in the front, I mean, the drive wheels are in the rear, there's two drive wheels, and you steer, it's like a three-wheel motorcycle. And basically the camber on the wheel, I mean, it's not that stable a vehicle, to say the least.
Well,
so,
the governor of Kentucky signed a law into action here in order to attract Zap. That one of their requirements was that whatever state they were going to locate in would need to pass a law making their vehicles legal on the road.
Okay.
And so that was done.
Well, but the Zap vehicles are legal on the road. The three-wheelers, because
well,
they're three-wheelers.
Apparently they weren't, because a special law had to be enacted to make them legal.
Oh,
at least
in
Kentucky.
Maryland, they're legal because they're classified as a motorcycle,
okay.
And they don't have to go through the real stringent DOT tests and all that. That's why you see a lot of electric three-wheelers, like the Corbin Sparrow. All of them are actually registered as motorcycles,
huh.
And they get shipped into the country. There's a lot more electric vehicles out there that are four-wheelers in places like Japan and China and stuff like that, but they won't let them into the country because they don't pass the crash tests for the four-wheel specs. But the motorcycle crash tests are far, far more lenient, to say the least. And that's
right.
Why you see them coming in as three-wheelers. And the problem with the three-wheeler is it's not that stable when it's designed with the front wheel as the turning wheel, and then the rear are the pushing wheels. The more stable configuration would be the two wheels up front, and then the rear wheel, which might be a drive wheel, in the back. And the most fun situation would be if you had the two front wheels in the front with the drivetrain hooked up, like a front wheel drive, and a single trailing rear wheel. You talk about taking some mean turns. You could have some fun with that.
Some of these vehicles I'm seeing on their website actually are four-wheel vehicles now.
Okay, but are they for sale?
Well, that's a good question.
There's either for sale or there's vaporware, one or the other.
Yeah, well, let's find out. Let's see what happens over the next year. And, I'm looking at a YouTube video of this Alias prototype, and it is a three-wheel vehicle. Okay, so there was a picture that made it look like a four-wheel vehicle, but then apparently it is three wheels. Well, I'll tell you what, Larry, in conclusion, why don't we talk about what's coming up? You had an excellent event at your place in June. Now there's something coming up in Florida in October, right?
Yeah, that's there was a guy at our event. He was a real character. They call him Spody. Very, very enthusiastic about water fuel technology, very knowledgeable, had a small engine running on hydrogen gas that he'd make himself, you know, with electrolysis and then run the engine. And he volunteered to put an event together, and he has come through, and it's in Ruskin, Florida, which is, I guess, the Tampa Bay area. And, you know, we need to find a place on the Internet. Have you got it at your museum website, the PDF for the show?
No.
Okay, well, we need to, maybe at your museum website, to get it out there, you know, so there's places people can get the, basically, the documentation. I think it's October 16th and 17th.
Yes.
But don't,
yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And you know, I don't know that area at all. Basically, I'm going to be coming down, bringing some technology down. I'm working right now. My project is this, the Scuffy Cell. And the reason I like the Scuffy Cell as a booster is because his numbers came out to about 193% Faraday efficiency. So,
and what is the Scuffy Cell, just briefly?
The Scuffy Cell is a Boyce-type cell. It uses easy-to-obtain materials, meaning most people could build one of these cells with simple tools using the AZEC. And the only thing you'd have to have is cut the 316 stainless, but that can even be sheared. It doesn't need to be laser cut.
And what
so,
size place does that use?
16 gauge.
What size?
It uses a 6x12 plate.
Oh, 6x12. Huh.
And it uses a split configuration, meaning there's 15 plates, so you have a center tap, and then the center tap is like the positive or the negative, and then the two outside plates or the other, and I can't remember off the top of my head which way it's wired, you know. But that's I haven't got mine wired yet. But when I do, I'll go back to the specs and do it according to the specs. But with that kind of and I think his efficiency is coming from conditioning. I think it's a very specialized means of conditioning with sodium hydroxide, and purges the carbon out of the plates and basically builds up a nice kind of a crackly film on the plates, which allows for better electrolysis. So it'll be interesting if I can duplicate those numbers personally, because to go beyond the laws of physics, that's kind of exciting.
Oh, absolutely.
And it'd be nice to replicate the guy Jeff, who lives over on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, right across the bay from me. He's posted these numbers, and I'd like to see if I can replicate them. And then hopefully, you know, put one in my car and drive it down and post the numbers on that and see how it all works out.
That would be great.
So
well, that sounds good. And I will try to post on the Water Fuel Museum webpage a link to the event in Florida in October.
Yeah, it certainly, if we can do an open source event like this about twice a year, you know, every 6 months, so we can come back from the event, have things in our mind, and then say, well, okay, I'm going to build this next. 6 months is enough time to build something neat in between. And, you know, we might not change the world, but if one by one, each one of us helps educate someone else, it'll come back around. Good things will happen.
Yeah, there's reason to be concerned about the continuing environmental degradation. For instance, I just saw in the news today they said that that fireflies are disappearing. We knew that honeybees were, but now fireflies are. So there is reason to be concerned about the effects of petrochemical industry on the world environment, and whether,
you know,
tailpipe pollution or pesticides or whatever.
I agree with you. I've noticed that myself. I don't see as many fireflies. Another thing in Florida we were talking about is the roaches are disappearing, which isn't really a bad thing, come to think of it.
Well, it could be, because even a roach could be like a canary in a coal mine, you know.
Could be.
I mean, they've always said that roaches would be the only thing that would survive a nuclear holocaust, so if we're able to get rid of them even before that, that's pretty scary, really.
Kind of. Or it may be some dynamic that we're not even, you know, putting into the equation.
That's true.
You know, who knows, but...
Maybe they don't like our junk food.
between you and I don't mind the fact that there's not as many roaches in Florida, you know. Those palmetto bugs. Ooh,
actually, since I live in Kentucky, I'm quite content that they stay there.
That's right. So, anyway.
Well, thanks for joining us, Larry, and I'm sure that good things will be coming from your laboratory there, and we'll be able to talk about that after the October meeting.
Hopefully, and hopefully Zap, with their work in Kentucky, with their plant, let's see what, I mean, you'll be watching that. And let's hope that they get up and running.
Yeah, in fact, we'll have a webcast, live webcast from that meeting next Saturday. So,
well, looking forward to it.
Anyone who wants to tune in can do so.
Good.
All right, well, thanks again, and take care.
Catch you in a bit. Bye.
All right, and thank you all for joining us. Good night.
No problem. Bye.